underwriting support for the Book Show podcast on WAMC.org comes from Northshire Bookstore, Manchester Center, Vermont, and Saratoga Springs, New York. An independent bookstore offering books, author events, gifts for children and adults, and more. Northshire.com. And from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a new Bachelor of Science degree in Public Health with a focus on social, physical, and behavioral sciences. strose.edu.
Welcome to The Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. Fanny Flagg began writing and producing television specials at the age of 19 and went on to distinguish herself as an actress and writer in television, films, and the theater. She's the author of the New York Times bestsellers Daisy Fay and The Miracle Man, Fried Green Tomatoes at the Whistle Stop Cafe, Welcome to the World, Baby Girl, and my personal favorite, A Red Bird Christmas. Her script for Fried Green Tomatoes was nominated for an Academy Award. Her latest novel, The Whole Town's Talking, tells the story of Lorder Nordstrom, his Swedish mail-order bride Katrina, and their neighbors and descendants as they live, love, die, and carry on in mysterious and surprising ways. It is a great pleasure to welcome Fanny Flagg to this week's book show. How are you?
Well, I'm just wonderful, and I am just so thrilled to see you. You know, I'm your big fan, so this trip wouldn't have been complete without coming to see my Joe.
Well, right back to you. I've said this to you before, and I'll say it to the audience as well. You're one of my favorite human beings, so it's a delight to spend time with you and talk about your work.
Oh, thank you.
I adore this novel. It's a beautiful novel, and it's fun. You know, one of my favorite plays is Our Town, and this has an Our Town quality to it.
It does. You're absolutely right, and thank you for that. I was always fascinated with Our Town, and I thought, you know, I think I'd like to do something humorous. I think this is a humorous Our Town. And the reason I came up with the idea, Joe, is that, you know, I had a lot of these characters that I just adored. And I killed off a lot of them in my last couple of books. So I spoke to my agent, honey, and I said to her, you know, I'm having a hard time coming up with an idea for this next book. And she said, she's a New Yorker, and she said, you're so good with those little small towns and those small town people that you write about. And I said, well, I've killed off most of them. And there was a pause. Now, don't forget, this is an agent. And she said, well, I wouldn't let that stop me. And yes, you know, I didn't. So anyhow, that's how that came about.
And that idea, as you say, it's very humorous. And so I would think that once you had the idea, it was fairly natural for you to write it in, that these characters would just appear.
Exactly. And the other thing, honey, you know, as we get to a certain age, we lose so many people and friends and relatives. And the main theme is I hate to say goodbye. And so I thought, well, maybe we don't have to say goodbye to those characters.
We should note, by the way, for people not familiar with your work, which is hard to believe there are folks that fit into that category, but when you say kill them off, you're not a mystery slasher.
Oh, no.
It's just old age.
They pass on.
They move on
peacefully.
Yes, very.
I don't kill them off, no.
Very peacefully. Given your close ties to the state of Alabama,
yes, sir.
This story takes place in Missouri. What brought you to Missouri?
Basically, I write about middle-class America and average people, and I was looking around for a place because some of my books are in Alabama, and I thought I'd like to go in the middle of the country. And I sort of looked at the map and I thought, you know, Missouri is sort of in the middle, a little southern, a little western, a little northern. And I thought that would be an excellent spot to represent small town America, is to put it right basically in the middle. Of course, I'm a little off, Joe. I think I'd have to drop Arizona and New Mexico for it to be the middle, but oh well.
Are you, when you come up with the town, it does have a very small town feel, which would fit into a southern literature,
yes,
and even a New England,
yes,
literature.
Yes. It is the funniest thing. I was so fascinated when Fried Green Tomatoes first came out. I received a letter, and it just thrilled me to death. It was all the way from Poland. And this lady wrote and she says, "Oh, this family is just like my family." I can't believe it. And so, you know, I think that the trick is to human behavior is the same everywhere. Culture may be different, but human behavior continues to be the same. And people can identify wherever they are with the behavior of people, which I find hilarious.
Well, certainly with, familial relationships,
yes.
And you'll roll your eyes and you get frustrated, but you do you do what you have to do to keep them happy.
That's right. Exactly.
When you look at this particular novel, tell us a little bit about Werder Nordstrom and the story you ultimately wanted to tell.
What I wanted to do is to tell a history of a small town America. Now, this particular novel would be a prequel because I have written about this little town of Elmwood Springs before. And I thought, well, I'll go back to the very beginning when it was just a territory, when it was just woods. And so Werder Nordstrom is a Swedish man who works very hard on a farm, saves his money, and comes to America. He was going west but stopped in Missouri. He bought some land and started a dairy farm. As they did back then, the immigrants, they put ads in papers, and he, being Swedish, put an ad in Chicago papers and said, "Swedish farmers, please come and help settle this little community." So the book starts in the 1800s. He brings in other farmers and their families and their farm animals, and they come. And then it continues on, and we follow this little town and basically history, too, outside history and inside history of the town. And I take it all the way into the future. I think the book ends in, 2020,
right.
Which is kind of ambitious because we don't know what's going to happen.
No, we don't. And with that type of scope, that would, I've heard, we've talked to many authors on this program about how daunting that is of having an epic, if you will, of going over so much time. But yours just seems so breezy and which I know it was hard work for you, but it's very easy in the reading.
Well, thank you very, I didn't start out for it to be a saga, but it just kept growing, like they say. And I had a lot of fun doing research. I do an awful lot of research before I write any book. I was fascinated with something that I had taken for granted. And I'm sure you and your family, no matter where we came from, we're here, and I didn't think much about it. But in studying those immigrants and what they went through to get to this country, the ocean trip over, you had to be, number one, physically strong to survive that. Number two, you had to be a dreamer and a chance taker to leave what is familiar, your home, maybe never coming back. So what impressed me the most about all the research I did was that no matter where we came from, as Americans, you and I and the rest of the country, we're sturdy stock. We come from sturdy stock.
Absolutely.
A combination of strong people with dreamers and people that want to take a chance. And I think that combination has made us what we are. We really come from pretty impressive people.
Fanny Flagg is our guest in this week's book show. The name of the book is The Whole Town's Talking. When you look at the writing, there is so much. It's so funny. There is such humor. And it fascinates me for people that write humor successfully, because it seems, here again, I'll go back to what I said a moment ago, it seems as though it is so easy. I know it must not be. But is that your default to write in that way of a humorous style, or is that something that you really have to work on and pace and make sure it's not overdone?
I'm glad you ask that, because sometimes I start out, I'm going to say, oh, I'd like to be serious. I'm going to do something very serious and profound. And then I make myself laugh and I get silly. And it's just natural. I cannot resist it. You know, Joe, I work for Candid Camera.
Sure.
And I find people hilarious. I always tell people, I don't go to the zoo. I go to the mall. And so I just can't help it. And I don't know where that comes from, but it's easier for me, I think, to write humorously because I find people funny, along with, of course, being heartbreakingly sad, too.
Although you strike me very much, and I say this from both knowing you, but also from reading, well, this is your 10th novel, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
That you are very much a glass half full type person.
Yes, yeah. I think so.
Does that usually go hand in hand with people that work in show business in Hollywood?
I think so. I really do. I think you have to be a little delusional. And a little, you know, like, oh, dear, reality. I will tell you, Joe, that what I think, I was an only child. I was a very lonely little girl because I didn't have a lot of relatives or anything. And I think that a lot of people that are in show business, that are writers, didn't have a great childhood. I don't know a lot of great writers that had a happy childhood. And we are trying to go back and rewrite it like mm-hmm. we wanted it to. You mentioned Daisy Fay and The Miracle Man.
Yes.
That was my little first novel. And they always say your first novel is autobiographical, which is true. That little girl was me. And we try to rewrite history to make it nicer than what it was. And I think I've retained that. As a matter of fact, you're going to laugh. I went down to Orlando to Disneyland.
Mm-hmm.
I had to do something down there. And, you know, I thought to myself, I could just live here. I'd just love to live in Disneyland. I don't know why. I just love it.
It's the happiest place
on
earth.
It is. And I like that. You know, I like to. I think, again, most writers are a little on the depressive side, too. I like to be around happy people. I don't like to be around people that aren't happy because I'm very affected by it. Mm-hmm. I pick up, you know, whoever I'm around, and if somebody's depressed, you know, the next thing I know, I'm, sitting in a room, you know, thinking, how am I going to jump off a building? So I have to be very careful. But, you know, there is a little town in California that I love. It's called Solvang, and it was founded by Danish people. I love to go up there. Everybody's happy. They're all eating apples fitters and love all that ice cream and stuff. So, yeah, I think that's true. I think you hit the nail on the head.
Well, I mentioned in the introduction you started writing and producing television at a very young mm-hmm. age, 19 years old.
Yes.
This is in the 60s. You mm-hmm. were, and then uh-huh. you broke into this
yes.
at the Canon Camera.
Yes.
What do you look at as your big break?
My big break, I believe, was Candid Camera. That put me on national television when I was in my early 20s. From there, I worked with some writers, and I had always wanted to be a writer. I never really wanted to be an actress, but I just fell into it. I wrote some material on a comedy album with some friends of mine, and I was doing Candid Camera, and they were doing Candid Camera, and it was about the first family, Lady Bird Johnson and mm-hmm. Lyndon Johnson. And the day that we were supposed to record, the actress that was supposed to play Lady Bird Johnson got ill and couldn't come. So they turned to me because I'm Southern. They said, can you do Lady Bird Johnson? I said, I don't know. And I ran down the street and we got an album of Beautify Washington. And I listened to her and I thought, yeah, I can do that. And so from that, they put me on The Tonight Show.
And when we say The Tonight Show, this was Jack Parr, right?
It was Johnny Carson. He was doing it in New York. So what was so funny that people don't know, I lived right down the street from NBC. And when somebody didn't show up, they'd call me on the phone and I'd run down there and get on the show. So I did The Tonight Show like 32 times.
Yeah.
And that was a big break for me. Yeah.
Suddenly people know you on the street.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They recognize you.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you are part of a very exclusive club mm-hmm. of guests on that show.
Mm-hmm. But I always was interested in theater, and I continued to do theater. Mm-hmm. But as you know, if you are on television, you get cast in things because you are on television.
Sure.
Not necessarily because you're that good, but because you can sell tickets. And I must say, I've benefited from that. But the last time I was in New York, I was doing a Broadway show, Best Little Whorehouse in Texas. And that was the last Broadway show I did. And that was 1980.
Was it a conscious decision not to come back, or have you just not found the right thing?
You know, I always long to write. One day, I remember it so well. You know how you remember these moments where you go, this is it. I went to work, and it was freezing cold, and I was sitting, it was February, I was sitting at my mirror, putting on false eyelashes, curling my hair, putting these cold dresses with sequins on, you know, and I started to go, oh, and I was moaning and complaining, and all of a sudden, something occurred to me. I thought, you know, you are taking a job from an actress who would love to have this. That's not right. You want to be a writer. So I gave my notice, and I just stopped all show business, which was difficult because the money did not come in. And I said, I'm going to take a chance and do what I've always wanted to do. And luckily, it worked out.
It certainly did work out. How much help did you get from, because you had success. I mean, the first mm-hmm. novel was a success. Mm-hmm. And then Fried Green Tomatoes at the mm-hmm. Whistle Stop Cafe, which became the film Fried mm-hmm. Green Tomatoes, which is, I believe, is celebrating its 25th mm-hmm. anniversary this year, nominated for an Academy Award. So I'm going to throw two questions in at once here. One is, that obviously allowed you, propelled you into, and gave you some comfort in the writing, I assume. But also, you still had that connection to show business.
Yes, absolutely. You're absolutely right. And the other thing you're absolutely right about is because of the movie, the book sold very well. And when a book sells very well, you get another contract. And so Fried Green Tomatoes afforded me contracts to write other books. And so I'm forever grateful. And the power of movies, unbelievable.
I know this is the book show, and we are talking about the new book, The Whole Town's Talking, mm-hmm. but I don't want to skip over Match Game. So
I don't either.
You first started in that show, from what I could tell, from about 1973.
Yes.
And ran almost into the 80s with
yes.
that show. My goodness, there's so many things to ask you about this, but I assume overall that was a fun experience, or you wouldn't have done it for as long as
it was hilarious. It was absolutely the most fun because everybody on that panel, they were friends of mine, particularly, as you remember, Joe, Brett Summers. She was my best friend.
And a dear heart.
Dear heart and hilarious. And Charles Nelson Reilly, of course, was hilarious, and all those people. And it was fun. It was like, and there was no script, and I work much better without a script because if I have to memorize something, I'm panicked. And so it was ad lib and fun. I live in Santa Barbara, California, so we filmed 5 shows in one day. So what I could do is I could go to L.A. early in the morning, film 5 shows, and be home at night and have 5 shows in the can. And then we started doing a nighttime show, so it was 6. And it was, I always tell people, I know they're doing reruns of Match Game, so there are younger people now that recognize me from the reruns. Mm-hmm. And I always tell people, if you watch Match Game, it's best to watch the last 2 shows, because we would take a dinner break, and my dear friend Brett and Charles Nelson loved their martinis. So when we'd come back to do the 2nd and 3rd show, it was a different kind of panel up there.
A little looser.
A little, yeah. And Charles's toupee would be a little to the left or to the right, and it was great fun. Yeah, I love that show. That show gave me a lot of recognition, and that doesn't hurt when you're out there trying trying to sell books. It's kind of really was a lucky, lucky show for me.
Because you were in living rooms every night for so many years. And that was the number one show for a long time.
Yes. It was amazing. Kids loved it. And I think it was on at a time where people would come home from school and watch it. It was on like 3:30 or something like that. Because I hear people say, oh, I used to come home from school and watch.
Absolutely.
And it was, as you know, like today, it was just so tame. But it was just a little naughty. We thought we were a little naughty. But you look at it now and you go, oh, dear, that's kind of nothing. But it was the right show for the right time, as was Candid Camera. And it's very interesting that, you know, certain periods, like we can't do Candid Camera again. I don't think, because I would go out in the streets or in places and do outrageous things to people. And I think today people would be much more frightened, wouldn't be as free, you know, wouldn't be as open. They'd be suspicious of a stranger coming up and doing odd things to them. But it was the perfect time for Match Game, the perfect time for Candid Camera.
For so many years and working in a collaborative medium, when you made that decision and it's only you in that room writing, was that a transition for you or did you take to it right away?
I loved it. Oh, I loved not having to put on makeup. I loved just sitting around in my pajamas and being able to stay at home and write. You know, as I said to you earlier, I was an only child, so I grew up very quiet, and I like to be quiet. Although I was in show business, I was always much more shy than I was outgoing. So it was easier for me to transition into being very quiet and creating alone. And the other thing, as you know, Joe, being a writer, is much easier if you are the observer and not being observed. And I was much more comfortable with that because if the attention is on you, you're not able to observe what you need to observe.
But times like this, when you're out and you're on the tour,
yes,
and you're doing the book tour,
yes,
you get to scratch that itch a little bit.
I do. And it's wonder. It's just enough. It's just enough because I get to go out, see people, talk to them, and it's the perfect combination for me. And I found that started writing books rather late. I was in my 30s. And to find a second career that I love so is, again, I just considered myself, you know, pretty lucky.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Talk to me. I mentioned in the introduction that my favorite novel of yours is a short little book called A Redbird Christmas.
Yes.
It's a beautiful book.
Well, aren't you kind? Yes, I like that book too.
How did that come about?
There is this small little town that I have to tell you is called Magnolia Springs, Alabama. It is on a beautiful river. And it has springs all around it, and there is only one street. It's called Oak Street, and it's lined on both sides with oak trees with Spanish moss hanging down. Now, when I went down there to write this book, at the time, Winston Groom, who wrote Forrest Gump,
sure,
and Mark Childress, who wrote Crazy in Alabama, we all three lived on that street. Isn't that amazing? The characters in that book are based on, as most of my characters are, based on real people. Frances Cleverdon is a lady that I just saw in Birmingham who's 92 now, and she's a real person. And Stick, the guy that's in, is a real person. And that little town just always, it was a magical little town. And I tried to capture that.
When you talk about based on a real person, there's a lot of you in these characters, though, isn't there?
Do you think so?
I think so.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. People sometimes will say, well, you know, what is the character that you think is mostly based on you? And I thought about it, and I thought about it, and it's a combination of many people, but most of them are characters that I would aspire to be. Now, if I could be any character that I've created, I would love to be Elner Shimfizzle. Aunt Eleanor Shemphissel is this kind of farm woman, older woman, and she absolutely is not neurotic, is calm, and just takes life as it comes. Now, the other character, Norma Warren, who's nervous, just a nervous wreck, that's kind of more like I am. I'm kind of just like, oh, I'm nervous, you know. And but I want to be Eleanor Shemphissel.
Well, the name of Fannie Flagg's new novel is The Whole Town's Talking. It is published by Random House. Fannie Flagg, you're such a dear person to me, and I thank you so much for spending time with us and telling us about the new book. I wish you all the luck in the world.
Joe, thank you, honey. Just wonderful to be with you. You know I'm your big fan.
Well, I'm right back to you, and I thank you so much.
Thank you, Joe.
Be well. We enjoy hearing from our listeners about our shows. You can email us at book@wamc.org. You can listen again to this or find past book shows via podcast or at wamc.org. Sarah LaDuke produces our program. Special thanks to Paul Ruest and Argo Studios in Manhattan. Bookmark us for next week. And thanks for listening. For The Book Show, I'm Joe Donahue.